Welcome to the Tech for Business podcast.
I love it. We're joined by Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity. We're talking cybersecurity trends of 2025, but I want to take a moment and look back at 2024 and start with, is there anything that surprised either of you? Was there anything that you thought would be a trend that didn't come, or something that popped up that you weren't aware of? Just a review, we thought that AI was going to be a big thing, zero trust, eliminating VPN. Those were all things we talked about a year ago for 2024. So what surprised you guys?
When you said that originally, I thought you were going to quiz us on what we said was going to be a trend for the year. I don't know. That was 12 months ago.
Yeah.
But then once you told me, I'm like, darn, we're smart.
I had some of the VPN stuff on the list for today. So now that I realize that we talked about it last year, now I might have to give more of an update on that one.
Yeah.
But I think for me, probably the one that surprised me the most was the hard stance on DMARC. Mm-hmm. So this is one that CIT has been talking to our customers for, I want to say 3 years, maybe 4 years now. And DMARC has historically had a very slow adoption, right? And so for those that aren't familiar with DMARC is, it's basically just a policy that gets put out on your DNS records that just says, if someone is trying to spoof our domain with email, just reject the message. So it's a policy that tells other mail servers what to do. And so we've been telling people to do this for years, trying to help them work through that. But it was really at the very end of 2023 when it was first announced that Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, they were going to enforce a lot of DMARC compliance for high mail volume senders in February of 2024. So we knew that it was something that you should do. We've been working towards that. But it was really surprising to a lot of organizations when the big mail providers come out and say, you have 5 months to get this done. Otherwise, we're going to start dropping your messages. So it was. Maybe I'll talk about it later.
Yeah. I lost you for a second.
Oh, I don't know where you guys lost me, but
they did the hard dropping of messages Then you froze.
Oh, so we knew that this was going to be coming for a long time, but it was really cool to see that a lot of the major providers are actually taking a hard stance and trying to move people forward because they knew that it was such a slow adoption. So I think that's probably the most surprising one. Mm-hmm. Is you don't tend to see organizations like Google, Yahoo, Microsoft just say you have 5 months to get something done.
Yeah. I would say I wasn't really surprised by it. There are trends that are starting to emerge again, which we're going to talk about in a second. It wasn't that I was surprised because we specifically said it, that VPNs were going to be a problem. What I was surprised about is how quickly it went from 0 to 100. Mm-hmm. Of, oh crap, it's a problem. We said it was, and then mm-hmm. It happened, but it wasn't like it started to trickle in. It was just like it went from off to on of being a problem. It was completely binary. It was like, boom, it happened. And so that was slightly surprising. But beyond that, no, I think the trends, you can see they're coming. And I'm excited to throw some out here and chat with Nate about what we think is going to happen in 25.
Sure. What's the top trend on both of your minds? If you had to pick one thing, we'll talk about all the things, but what's the thing you're most excited that you think is coming in 2025?
Those are two different things.
I was going to say, define exciting.
Sure.
Are you asking the security person that wants more changes or like newsworthy excitement, right?
How would you like to think that? What is the topic you want to start with?
Yeah. What's exciting to end users or the security professionals on the back end? Todd, you got something?
Well, I'd say what's top of mind, it's not new, right? Because we talked about it coming into this year, but it's AI everything. And mm-hmm. again, not new. You're just going to see so much more of it in your daily lives. While this year was coming, it's here. So you're going to see it all over the place. And the biggest one is going to be that, unfortunately, phishing is going to start to become indistinguishable from legitimate emails. It's going to be by far the biggest concern from my perspective. Again, it's not new, but it is the single biggest thing on the top of mind for me. Now, exciting, I'll touch on that after Nate goes.
Yeah, with the AI and the phishing emails, it's kind of interesting to see some of the AI providers they're coming in and they're trying to follow behind with the ethical considerations. Yeah. I'm sure they put a lot of forefront into some of this, but users always know how to find the exploits. And what we're seeing is you go ask OpenAI, Copilot, Claude, Gemini Advance, whoever, and say, go write me a phishing email for this. They're like, sorry, I can't do that. That's unethical, right? Or create me a reverse proxy Python script to be able to do this. Sorry, that looks like you're trying to do a reverse Trojan or something. And then you say, write me a convincing email to do this instead of a phishing email. And it says, okay, here you go.
Or, why are we giving tips?
I don't control what you do. This is educational purposes only. FBI, don't come and arrest me. So anyways, it's interesting in how AI and the companies are trying to keep up with ethical standards as well.
Yeah, just to expand on it real briefly again, is you're going to see it in a lot of things. You're going to see it become more prevalent in defense. You're going to see it in training modules. It will be in everything. So it's here. It's going to be in dang near everything, especially from a security perspective. A lot of the tools are going to be promoting it. You're going to get sick of hearing about it. I'm sick about hearing about it. I'm sure Nate is as well. It's,
you know,
it's exhausting.
Yeah. So I think I actually have an answer for you, Kelsey. I think the exciting. Sorry.
One and the same.
It's a Friday morning here. We'll just dub that one over, right? I think one of the things that is exciting for me is just the continuation of the VPN replacements, the Zero Trust Network Access solutions. And I think I find this one exciting because it is easier for the users instead of a traditional VPN. It's welcomed by executives because they're reducing cyber risk. And also, it's just new technology, which is fun, right? So the ZTNA solutions, right, it's nothing new. These have been around for a long time, but typically they've either been pretty expensive, only in the premium tools, that type of stuff. But we talked about it last year saying this is going to become a trend. But I think in 2024 is when we really saw a lot of the providers start integrating it into their core systems, but like in the SMB market. And one of the other components of it is of the security incidents that CIT does these days, very rarely are they like ransomware engagements because someone downloaded a file and ran it on their systems, right? We have a lot of controls on the endpoints these days. If we do see some type of security incident in a customer's environment, it's either going to be an email compromise or a VPN compromise. And 2024, we saw a huge spike in the number of brute forces on it, on VPNs. And so we've had a lot of these conversations over the years. To Todd's point earlier was we didn't really expect it to go 0 to 100, right? We knew it was coming, but yeah, I think it was somewhere around April or May, we started getting just flooded with a lot of VPN brute forces across customers that had it. And then also there's extremely affordable solutions these days that are pretty comparable to what you would have to just pay for a normal VPN. So it's really not that big of an uplift anymore. And I think the last component I had of that was to put it in perspective of how adopted this is becoming. Even the VPN providers are now introducing their own ZTNA solutions because they know that their legacy business is going to whittle away.
I was going to say that too. Now I've got a new favorite, but I did want to emphasize what Nate said too, is it is tremendously exciting from our perspective because it is an easy entry into zero trust and you need to do it right. So one of the bigger concerns with zero trust is it's big and it's unwieldy and it's really hard to go from here to there. We've used the analogy as it's like climbing the mountain, but you can get started on ZTNA very quickly. You don't need a lot of stuff in front of that to get going. And then as he mentioned, it's very affordable. So being able to get in, get your zero trust process going or extended is really cool in my opinion. Since he stole my hotness, I'm just kidding. I would say the next big thing that I think we're on the precipice for, and unfortunately this one is going to be harder to implement, but the next one I think is passwordless for me. Again, we see it coming. It's been coming, but to me, we're there now. CIT is a little bit on the forward edge of how these things tend to go. So when we're talking about these things, we're really excited about them. We typically try to get them implemented. So we're well on our way on our Zero Trust. We are in the process of flipping over to passwordless. And so we have a major initiative for the beginning of 25 to be passwordless for our organization. And I couldn't be more excited about it. Again, when you look at removing friction from employees, passwordless is an absolute game changer. We have a very strong password policy in place today at 15 characters. We've got a quick screen lockout process. So if you get up and go to the bathroom, grab a glass of water, by the time you get back, you're cranking in your 15 character password. Guess what passwordless does? Fixes that. So good. Love it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't put that one because, again, I wanted Ariel to define exciting, because that one's exciting for the end users, not for people like me that have to go actually implement it. Well, it's a lot of work.
So I was going to say, was interesting. Last week we had the tech trends people on and they brought up passwordless. So that just leans totally into everybody is excited for this passwordless, not just the cybersecurity people. Everybody's looking forward to it.
Yeah. So I'll touch on that a little bit is on the consumer side, you can start doing this pretty quick. A lot of websites, Microsoft and Google and all this are saying, yep, just let's do a pass key. You can either do things like use a YubiKey if you have one. There's other ones out there. Microsoft has some. The other one is a lot of the password managers are now allowing you to save pass keys into the password manager. So then as typically, let's go pick on this YubiKey, it is only tied to this one hardware token. If I lose this, I lose it. With the password managers, you can start saving these pass keys into the vault. And so it can be accessed via multiple systems while still providing the same benefits of a pass key over a password. So we're right on that edge where you can start doing this with a lot of websites. It's not everything yet. I will say on the corporate side, it is a lot of work to get to a passwordless state. I just want to be clear. It's not a, let's do that tomorrow and it's going to be a $2,000 project. It won't be, I promise. So again, you don't, to Todd's point with the mountain climbing, you don't pay $2,000 to get up to the summit of Everest, right? With the $70,000 expense.
Yeah. There are so many other things that we are going to talk about, but speaking of the tech trends podcast that we had, they also brought up, when speaking about AI, they talked about deep fakes, and then they also brought up quantum computing, which I know you guys had touched on as well, which I thought was an interesting crossover. What does that sort of look like in the coming years?
Deep fakes are here, unfortunately. Oh, gosh. I wanted to use an example. If anybody's ever seen the Gary Busey meme where he says, I want to talk about, and I forget what he says, it's butter something or other. You know what I'm talking about? You've seen that meme? It doesn't matter. It's him, and he looks like he's weirder than normal or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a deep fake. It's not him. It's a total deep fake. They just totally made it up. And he said, let's talk about that. So they're here and you're seeing it. You're consuming it. It's out there already. And yeah, from my perspective, it's tough. And I don't remember if we ended up getting into the details on how to do it. I know I've done some in-person trainings where we've gotten into deep fakes and what to do about them, but they're here. And we didn't talk about it a whole lot last year. And we didn't originally have it on the list now. Quantum computing, I think, is very interesting. And I think we're really close to this too, but what the exact timing on it is, I'm not entirely certain. But the post-quantum cryptology is something that's really coming up. So one of the articles I'd seen earlier this week, literally this week, was that Google has come up with a new processor and they can do computations in a few seconds, which they would equate to current technology taking 47 years, I believe, was the magic number. And if you think about that, it's just mind-blowing, right? So we talk about if you've got a password that's long enough, how long would it take to decrypt and whatnot? Quantum computing turns everything on its ear. We're still in the early stages of quantum. That doesn't mean it isn't out there, though. And it is coming. It does have a major impact on a variety of other things, too. Like when you get into Bitcoin mining and a variety of other things, quantum is definitely going to be a game changer as well.
Yeah, I'll touch a little on quantum computing. I think one of the things that we're starting to see right now is it's more widespread adoption of post-quantum encryption. So, for example, we've been talking about this for quite some time, or just in general, people have been talking about post-quantum cryptography quite a bit. But IBM released some of the first post-quantum encryption servers. I want to say it was 2019, 2020. So they've had it for at least just a couple of years, right? And so for those that don't know quite what we're talking about, cryptography is how do you encrypt data? And there's different strengths and different types of it, depending on the need. What people are concerned about is once quantum computers become fast enough, how do you protect the data and that encryption standard in the first place? So the reason why you would do this is, let's go pick on manufacturing or something like commercial aviation. The technology that gets put into an airplane might be in service for 30, 40 years. So if you know that the encryption is going to be broken at some point, increase the standard to try and give you those extra years of a buffer. So that's why we're starting to see some of that post-quantum server architecture get put into hardware, so that hopefully by the time, let's say it's 10 years down the road when quantum computers are finally strong enough, they have 10 years of data that's already encrypted to hopefully give them that buffer. So people are just trying to get ahead of the curve. The NIST also released their, I think it was the first couple post-quantum encryption standards earlier. I think that was back in August, if I remember correctly. And so we're starting to see the US government has set the standards. And now I would expect to see in 2025, some of the hardware manufacturers start to take those final standards and build it into the chips on their servers.
Yeah, I think this is a big deal. Just to kind of emphasize what Nate was talking about with the airplane analogy, as I read an article, and I'll share it with us, what we normally do too. I think they came out earlier this week, and they were talking that Bitcoin would need over 300 days of downtime to adequately defend itself from this quantum change. One of the things that we typically see as we're going through year in, year out is the cryptography standards do change on a regular basis, and there's a lot of legacy stuff in place. And so part of our standards are get rid of the end of life encryption methods and get onto the latest and greatest. This will be, again, something that absolutely turns the world on its ear. And at some point, it'll be one of those things where we go, you can't wait. You need to get rid of all of that. We're not quite there yet. What the timing on that was, where I was alluding to at the very beginning, is I don't know what that timing is just yet, but it's not too terribly far into the distant future. Well, we're going to have to really get super aggressive on what Nate's touching on.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. So we've talked a lot about these new tools and different technologies that are coming up. Let's talk a little bit more as cybersecurity as a whole. I know before we started, we touched a little bit on cybersecurity as a service and sort of what does that mean going forward? How does access to cybersecurity and our interaction with partners or vendors going to change in the next year?
We talked about this in a variety of different ways in 24, but there's been this continuous consolidation of tools. So you're seeing a lot of organizations do acquisitions. And they're starting to pick up bits and pieces of smaller organizations to complete their portfolio for a couple of reasons. One, it makes their offering more complete, but also they're trying to get bigger pieces of the pie. One of the larger trends that we've been seeing is that those organizations are also starting to offer in the support of it. So security or operations center as a service is something that you're starting to see those organizations are starting to offer, which is great. It's really hard to find people out there to help support the tools. And these tools do tend to be very technical, and they also create in a lot of information that needs to be consumed, another area where AI will help. But as it's going through those processes, you need people to be able to do it. So that's where cybersecurity as a service, if you will, I'm going to try and use that as an umbrella statement of people are making an offering that comes to market that's more or less quote unquote complete. And the intent is that they're trying to make you get a service that's actually serviceable. For example, we have seen in some industries where a regulation will come through and they'll say it's absolutely required that you have EDR. You must do that by the end of the year. And the organizations, for whatever reason, cost or other, decide that they're really going to put in the absolute least amount of effort they possibly can to accommodate that requirement. And so what you'll typically see is they'll get the EDR tool itself, put it in place and move on. From our perspective, you can't live in a really strong security stance with just the tool. You do need the back end of it. If somebody's looking at it, maintaining it, is this real? Is it not real? What do we need to do about it? So that additional service behind it has to be happening, and how you deal with that is a critical aspect from my perspective. I do think there's still a gap out there. It's great that these vendors are offering this service, but there still is a bit of a gap depending on what organizations have in place for their IT/security individuals. If they don't have any security on staff, that's usually not enough. It needs to still get translated into normal everyday language. So there is still a bit of a gap on what's going out there. There are organizations that kind of fill that gap, or CIT, for example. We pride ourselves on trying to fill that gap, going, we'll take the nerd out of IT and make that very actionable for you. We love the nerd, but we also know how to speak like normal individuals.
I love that.
Yeah. With the SOC and your vendors, making sure that they actually have maybe an internal security team managing that for you. A lot of managed service providers will outsource most of that to a third party and to say, yes, we'll sell you security solutions, but we have no control over it. And so if there's issues or anything like that, again, you have to work through a third party. You can't ever try to improve anything. Or if you're comfortable calling your service provider for support, now do you have to remember a different phone number to be able to call them in the middle of the night when you're tired or something, right? It does cause a little bit of friction or division, especially when it comes to an actual security incident. Is maybe your security team says there's a major incident, but they are not talking to the network or endpoint team, or nothing, no action can actually be taken other than to alert, right? And so that's the challenge when you're starting to see a lot of outsourcing happening. So Todd, I was actually thinking about this earlier. I think 2025 is CIT's 10-year anniversary of having dedicated security solutions for our customers. So I remember some of the first SIMs were going in back in 2015. Yay, 10-year anniversary for our team. So other than that, though, yeah, I do want to touch on Todd's point. It's not just the fear, uncertainty, doubt that we're trying to spread about you need a team behind it. If you're selling a solution, we've said it before that a proper governance over your security, it requires the people processing technology. If you have the technology, you might buy best in breed, but you still need that people in the process. Again, we have our own internal security team monitoring the solutions for our customers. And I couldn't tell you the number of times that we see preliminary insights into a larger attack starting to develop, but we're able to come in and say, there's malicious stuff starting to happen on this device. Do you want to just quarantine off the network right now? And then it's gone and the threat's just completely gone. So that's the importance of having a proper team.
Yeah. One other thing that I was going to expand on that real quickly is that as you're doing this and you're looking at these tools, one other consideration is a lot of the vendors have the ability to take that SOC, that those alerts for you, but where they're located does matter for some industries. Finding US-based individuals is very difficult. So it is something to at least have in the back of your head of, while it's great that it's coming, it's sometimes a requirement that they must be in the US, or if you're in the EU, they may be requirements there as well, that it must be EU-based or it doesn't match with GDPR and so forth. So just be aware of whatever your compliance is, that's something that you've got in your mind as you're looking and evaluating those tool sets.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that we're talking cybersecurity, but it's so tied with compliance. I mean, I hate to diverge too much, but is there anything compliance-wise that you think is really going to be top of mind in 2025?
There's stuff coming.
All a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe it's worth a different podcast.
That one might be. We'll just
a little teaser, though.
There's upcoming legislation about possibly implementing some mandated additional security controls in the healthcare industry. We see the financial industry is shifting a bunch. The FFIC CAT model has been deprecated in 2024. They're all moving over to a more the NIST cybersecurity framework. CMMC is continuing to see some changes over there with V2. And it's live. So there's a lot of regulations that are coming down the pipeline.
From my perspective, the governance, risk, and compliance is part of cybersecurity. You can't have one without the other. But yeah, there is quite a bit of stuff coming. The vast majority of those changes are coming largely because the world has changed from when a lot of those things were put in place. So Nate mentioned the CAD tool from the FFIEC as an example. That was written 7-8 years ago. And so it really hasn't been up to date in quite a while. And so they're now trying to go, okay, do we rewrite it, or do we look at other tools that are being updated on a regular basis? So that's what's really driving it, is the attacks have changed, the methodology and how we support things have changed, the transition to the cloud has changed, et cetera, et cetera. So those compliances are coming up and making a big difference. The other one, like Nate mentioned with the healthcare, is they're really trying to find a way of how do we actually make the healthcare security a real thing that is supportable and auditable, et cetera. And so there is bipartisan legislation out there that's coming through. It's a bill at the moment. What happens there? Don't know. How long does it take to implement? Don't know. But it's out there. And personally, I think it's a good thing. It really does need to get in. You can see some rather ridiculously large healthcare events over the last year and just slight change.
Yeah.
So as we get towards the end of our podcast, is there anything else trend-wise, anything else that is top of mind that a year from now you want to have made that prediction?
The biggest one I would say, I'm sorry, Nate, you want to go first? Go ahead.
No.
He's going to steal it. He's going to steal your idea.
If I fully hand it over to you, we're never going to end here. I think I have maybe one that I would classify as more of a prediction, and one is more of maybe just more of a trend that I would foresee to see just a little bit. I don't want to make a full prediction on it, but maybe solution providers are going to continue enforcing security standards at a grand scale. But we already, and this isn't like a major revelation because it's been happening for years and years, right? Microsoft has been saying you need to implement multi-factor forever. This year, they finally said, if you're an admin in Microsoft 365, you have to have MFA. I did see early glimpses to this where someone's account, they were sending out email and they didn't have MFA enabled. And Microsoft just automatically blocked their mail flow and said, it looks like this could possibly be an account compromise. And the recommendation to be able to unblock it was once the user enabled MFA, they were able to send mail again. So I start to see the very earliest glimpses of, it's not a policy that Microsoft is putting it out. It's the anomaly detections that they're then using to then enforce the grander MFA push that they're trying to do for all users. So we saw it with DMARC. They just said, you need to do this. Now I start to see Microsoft continuing to advance their stuff. There's companies like CIT that are just saying, we are putting some of these solutions in place because we see that they are mitigating a lot of the major risks that we've seen over the last year or so. And I don't expect to see that slow down. Is you're going to see a lot of pushing from the top down to your organizations as everyone is trying to adopt better security controls. The second non-prediction is insurance continues to skyrocket in cost for those premiums. We see this across every insurance market. Is your homeownership, they're dropping roofs from being covered and doing the deprecation, pulling out estates. We see your healthcare costs increasing, cybersecurity costs after 2020 has just only continued to go up. So I've heard early glimpses of just organizations just foregoing insurance altogether and saying, why should I go spend $100,000 on insurance for the year to mitigate some type of security incident? I should go put $100,000 into the tools to prevent the security incident in the first place. And so we've been recommending cybersecurity insurance forever, but then all of a sudden now it's so expensive that people are like, let me just reinvest that back into our business and prevent it from the first place. So.
Yeah, I would say it's not a prediction, but I will tell you, if you do the right things, I actually was working with one of our customers earlier this week, and they said this is the first time that their cybersecurity insurance went down. Now, we have been working with that particular organization on their security posture for the last 8 years, and so it's currently in a very strong state where when they went through the review of what are you doing, how are you doing it, et cetera, it justified that the insurance organization said the risk with you is actually ridiculously low. We're going to lower your rate. You don't see that very often. It's not common. But again, their posture is strong enough that organization, that insurance company said your risk is low, so we're not going to charge you an arm and a leg. I would say mine's not really a prediction either. It's more of what we're doing. As Nate said, there's certain things that as a provider, we're highly recommending you start to do things. So the major shift for 25 from our point is we're going to go very heavily into the zero trust world of how do we push organizations down that path. And again, similar to passwordless, this is a massive lift. But what we're doing is starting to say, we need to put a real strong plan in place. We are now at the pivot point of saying, is your infrastructure set the way it should be, right? So are you cloud? Are you on-premise? What does that look like? Let's start to put things in place to help us budget for what you should be doing. So hypothetically, if we're going to want to put some sort of SASE tool set, which is really designed to give you a very robust suite of tools to help you get along your zero trust journey, you can't do that bite in one shot. You're probably going to have to space it out, but you can do things to help pay for it. For example, if you've got some consolidation of tools, you want to look at a firewall as a service, that might be something that you can pivot into it. The trend for us in 25 is we're going to start building that budget and saying 3 to 5 years from now, we expect you to have X, Y, and Z, while also building the roadmap from A to Z to saying, how are we going to get there? It's the trend that we're going to start pushing. You're not going to see this massive flip of a whole bunch of people are now what we would consider zero trust enabled, but we are going to do it. And Nate said earlier, with the zero trust network access, some of those pieces are very easy to do. I could have this on my list too, is we're actually really going after network access control in a big way too, because we found a partner who is interested in securing organizations in a manner that we are. So they've bought a tool set to market that's very easy to use, very easy to configure, and remarkably affordable. So it again allows us to start to get down the path of, we can get tools in place to start to secure you and get you set up for your future infrastructure, architecture of your network and security.
Yeah, that wasn't a prediction either.
Yeah, I said that. I put that out there. This isn't a prediction. This is a trend that we're going to be doing.
I know. Yeah. I was going
to
say,
we saved it to the end of non-predictions.
Non-predictions. I'm sure it will come up and then we'll talk about it in a year from now. But I'm going to, our quick lightning round, quarter one, businesses are sitting there. They're planning out the year. What is one thing they should have at the top of their list after all the things we talked about today? What's one thing that you think they should bring up, invest in, research, learn more about right away in January?
ZTNA.
Yeah, ZTNA. It's really a no-brainer at this point, is like I said about the benefits, right? It's easier for your users. It reduces risks. It's low cost. There's a ton of solutions out there at this point. If you're still using VPNs, this is going to be abrupt.
Stop.
You're falling behind at this point, yeah. Right? It's there, but everyone is going this direction. So again, whether or not you put it into the budget and you account for it at the end of life of your next firewall or VPN appliance or something, that's fine. The biggest thing is that we still see it as probably one of the number one attack vectors for your network. That is not email accounts.
Yeah, I am assuming that we are doing our due diligence and we've got multi-factor and endpoint detection response, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So assuming all of those things are in place, then it's ZTNA with a bullet.
Yeah. Okay. We will get together again a year from now and see if all of our predictions were true.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Subscribe or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.